place. More at Capterra.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Coming up today, we're going to hear a debate between the two mayoral candidates for the city of Tampa. That election is happening in just about 2 weeks on April 23rd. The candidates, David Straz, a local businessman, and Jane Castor, the former chief of police. This is a debate that took place last Friday and aired first on WEDU-TV. And as you listen to the debate, if you want to comment about it, you can always send an email into the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Later on in this program, in this hour, we'll open up the phone lines. So stick around for a debate between the two Tampa mayoral candidates coming up next right here on 88.5 FM.
Voters in Tampa will soon select a new mayor. Former police chief Jane Castor is facing off with businessman David Straz to be the new leader of the city. The two candidates are here answering questions and sharing their vision for Tampa's future. The Tampa mayoral runoff debate is next on a special edition of Florida This Week. Welcome to Florida This Week and the debate between the two candidates running to become Tampa's next mayor. I'm Rob Lurie, reporter and host of Florida This Week. I'll be moderating this debate between former Tampa Police Chief Jane Castor and Tampa businessman David Straz. Tampa voters will choose their next mayor in the runoff election on Tuesday, April 23rd. I'll be asking a number of questions, including several sent in on social media by members of the public. The candidates will also have a chance to ask each other a question, and each will have a closing statement. To begin, I'll ask each candidate a question. They'll have a minute to respond. If I think an answer needs a rebuttal, it will last 30 seconds. Our timing is being provided by the Hillsborough County League of Women Voters, who have generously donated their time for this debate. Well, let's start. Our first question is for both candidates, and we're going to start with Jane Castor, and then David Straz will answer too. Our streets are in gridlock during morning and afternoon drive. Tell us specifically what you would do in your first year in office to ease traffic congestion, Ms. Castor.
Well, clearly, traffic is an issue here, and we've never lacked for good ideas and transportation solutions. We've lacked for the funding. And so now that we have the All for Transportation funding, what I will look to is some quick fixes. Paving some roadways, looking at a comprehensive sidewalk plan that goes from the schools out, and then also working on the lighting to make our streets safer. But I want to extend the streetcar from Ybor City to Tampa, that goes down to Tampa Heights, all the way through Seminole Heights, connecting those neighborhoods, activating the CSX line that will go from Port Tampa through South Tampa, downtown, Ybor City, East Tampa, all the way out to USF, and then also looking at our waterways, you know, using them, the ferry system, to get some of the traffic off of the roadways. And then also having an east-west connector from downtown out to West Shore, something along Cypress that could then connect to the airport. You know, ways that we can get some congestion and get people off of the roadways.
And just to be clear, you would put trains on those CSX lines?
Yes. Yeah. Activate the CSX line for commuter rail.
All
That's
right,
correct.
Very good. Mr. Straz, so what about transportation?
Well, transportation is a very important thing. And we do have gridlock all over. The All for Transportation referendum, which I voted for and which passed, is a big step toward resolving some of these problems. The streets everywhere are bad. Everywhere are bad. So paving needs to be done. All of that needs to be looked at. It's bad all over the city. Sidewalks are important. Ditches in West Tampa are important. A lot of things need attention. And I would see that they get attention, and as we get that money in from All for Transportation, that's going to fund a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. And Ms. Castor said that she would like to have trains on the CSX lines. What would you say to them?
Well, I have to see what's going to happen and what that would do for us all over the city. I think the first thing to do would be to restore the 20% cuts in buses, bus service that has occurred. The people in...
Okay, and I'm sorry, if you want to finish that thought.
Well, I would. The people in East and West Tampa can't get to the grocery store or the doctor. That needs to be corrected.
All right.
Our
second question also begins with Jane Castor. A SWAT team was sent into a home in Central Tampa a few years ago to apprehend a young man who was described by a paid police informant as a marijuana dealer. Turns out the man had two joints. He was killed by the TPD in that raid. Now, I know you can't talk about the case specifically, but can you tell us why a SWAT team should be sent in to arrest a marijuana dealer?
Mm-hmm. Well, each of those decisions on when to deploy, and clearly that is a very serious situation whenever a search warrant is executed, and those decisions are passed through assistant chiefs. And usually it is based on the danger. If there are firearms in the home, believed to be in the home, and that the individuals inside have had those. And clearly in this instance, that case was proven out, and the individual pulled a firearm on the SWAT team members, and as a result, the officers took action to protect themselves and others.
All right. Mr. Stratz, the next question is for you. I want to ask you about, in the last week, the Stratz campaign has put out an ad saying that Ms. Castor was wrong when she says that crime went down by 70% when she was in the top ranks at the Tampa Police Department. You're quoted as saying that she misrepresented the facts. Do you have evidence to back up your position?
Well, I do. People that have given testimony to that fact. And what actually happened was the bundling of all of these crimes into one and not telling the people in Tampa what has actually occurred. There have been a lot of homicides. Homicides are up. The 70% number doesn't stand. A false sense of security is being portrayed when it's not there.
Ms. Castor, would you like to rebut for 30 seconds?
Sure. Mr. Stratz has no idea what he's talking about. Those statistics are correct. They have been audited by the FBI, OPAGA, Florida Department of Law Enforcement. We take that very seriously, the reporting of our crime stats. And to base his evidence on a disgruntled police employee and his own expert witness that admitted he never even looked at the information, he based his decision on intuition is reckless, frankly, in my opinion.
All right. Well, this question goes to both of you. The Florida Department of Transportation looks like it's reviving a plan similar to the old TBX plan to widen some of the interstate system through Tampa. And let's start with Ms. Castor. Do you support FDOT's plan that is very similar now to TBX?
Well, I think what the FDOT has to do is to work with the neighborhoods. We cannot have any neighborhoods destroyed by interstate systems. And I believe that the neighborhood, which I live in, Seminole Heights, and FDOT can work together in the development of a plan. And they got off to on the wrong foot in the beginning, but I believe that they can work together on that. But I would rather see some quick transportation initiatives that we can put in place to be able to relieve the congestion in our community. Also, the activation of the bus system. You know, we went from 96th in the nation to 40th overnight in funding. So we'll be able to provide reliable bus service to neighborhoods that have never seen it before. And we need to not only provide that commuter mass transportation solutions, but we need to change the culture as well. You know, that buses are looked at as a viable form of transportation and to be able to use those to move people in our community.
Mr. Stratz, same question. The TBX plan, it's not exactly the TBX plan, but the FDOT seems to be reviving something similar to the old TBX plan.
Yes, and I spent a considerable amount of time on the Florida Transportation Commission under two separate governors. And what I would like to see is exactly what the Florida Department of Transportation is proposing. I don't believe it's sufficient or will do what needs to be done by simply widening roads. That's not the answer. I've already mentioned the bus situation. That's been a horrible thing, cutting that service, and that's on the backs of the working people in our city. That needs to be restored.
Next question goes to Mr. Straz. Your charitable foundation, which is self-funded, owns almost a 10% stake in the Bank of Nevis in the Caribbean. That island nation is considered a tax haven where people from around the world who want to avoid taxes park their money. The Guardian newspaper describes Nevis as the world's most secretive. Why choose Nevis as a place to put your foundation money?
Well, for a couple of reasons. First of all, that is my wife's family ancestral home. And we have a rental house there. We vacation there once in a while. It's a wonderful island. There's a bank that was started by the indigenous people. It's an indigenous bank, a very small bank on the island. And they need help. The island needs help to promote its economy. And I thought that I would invest in that bank along with the government and the Social Security Administration, both of whom are bigger investors than I am, in order to bolster the economy of the island of Nevis.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Castor, would you like to respond to that at all?
No, I'm not going to touch that.
All right. Well, the next question is for Ms. Castor. The Tampa City Council voted this week to approve red light cameras for another 5 years. You're in favor of red light cameras. Opponents say there are better ways to make intersections safer other than enriching a private company and imposing fines on people who sometimes are unable to pay them. Why do you support red light cameras?
There are other ways to make intersections safer through engineering, through enforcement, through education. There are a number of ways to make intersections safer. I had, when I was at the police department, 17 officers on the traffic squad. We analyzed all the high accident intersections, the top 20, and deployed our officers in those locations. They write citations for red light runners, and everybody behaves for a week or two, and then they go back to running the red lights. And so the red light cameras are a constant reminder that you need to stop for the red lights. And I can tell you that I have knocked on countless doors to tell people that their loved ones weren't coming home because of horrific traffic accidents, most of which occur in intersections in T-bone crashes. And so red light cameras work. None of that funding came to the police department, and we used it strictly as a life-saving tool, and I am in support of red light cameras.
Mr. Straz, would you like to rebut that?
No.
Okay. All right. Can I ask, do you agree with red light cameras?
I do not.
Okay. Well, this question is for both Mr. Straz and Ms. Castor. Let's start with Mr. Straz. Let's look at what you would do in the face of an impending hurricane. Let's say a hurricane is in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. It's been heading north to the Louisiana coast, and then suddenly it begins to turn toward us. All the spaghetti models say it will turn directly toward the mouth of Tampa Bay, heading right for downtown Tampa. You have a little bit more than 24 hours to prepare. Tell us what your first steps to prepare and prevent a loss of life would be.
You're asking me that. Well, first of all, if we get that kind of notice, obviously we've got to put everything in gear right off the bat. I would get the experts that, once I'm mayor, that I will have around me that are experienced in that type of thing, get them together to see exactly what should be done immediately. There's very little time to act on these things, and I'm a man of action. So I will have people, experts, on the staff, and we will get on it and do what needs to be done.
All right. Ms. Castor, same
Well,
question.
I've lived through it. You know, that is Hurricane Charlie, and we are prepared as best we can be here in the city of Tampa. So if I were only given 24 hours, we have the evacuation routes down. Clearly, you wouldn't have enough time to get people out. We have to come out of St. Petersburg first to get them out, and we have plans for putting all of the roadways out of town. So I would put that into effect, ask those individuals that could shelter in place to allow them to do so, open up shelters, activate the bus lines to bring as many people as we could out of the low-lying areas and get them into the hurricane category 5 structures, that we could move as many people as we possibly could and get those individuals in there and activate our hurricane preparedness plan.
All right. Well, let's ask both of you another question, similar question. Over the years, billions of dollars of investments have been made on Tampa's waterfront, everything from the largest hospital to a military base to hotels to high-rises to houses, restaurants, medical schools, museums, etc. A Boston firm that analyzes potential catastrophic damage reported that the Tampa Bay region would lose $175 billion in a storm the size of Hurricane Katrina. A World Bank study called Tampa Bay one of the most at-risk areas on the globe. What steps would you take as mayor to protect against rising sea levels? And let's start with Ms. Castor.
One of the things that I would do, this is a very real problem, and I would have a resiliency and sustainability officer in my administration. And then I would look at approaching this from the opposite ends. First and foremost, what can we do to mitigate the sea level rise? Because it is coming. What steps could we take, whether it's through our building codes, lifting buildings up, roadways, whatever it is that we can, steps we can take to mitigate the climate change. And then on the other end of that, what steps we can take to reduce our carbon footprint from simple items day to day that we could do, all the way up to large changes, looking at the city's fleet, you know, looking at sustainable, renewable energy, whatever steps that we could take to reduce that carbon footprint and slow down that sea level rise as much as possible. But it is an issue that has to be dealt with, and we cannot ignore it any longer. We also, not just from the city of Tampa, we need to look at it as an issue to affect the Tampa Bay area.
All right. Mr. Straz, what would you say?
Well, yes, this is a huge issue. Could be just catastrophic. What we need to do that hasn't been done is devote some time and energy and attention to our infrastructure things. One that concerns me the most is Tampa General Hospital, where I have served as chairman of the board for a number of years. We have the only level one trauma center on the west coast of Florida. It is not only important to us in Tampa, it's important to the west coast of Florida. We must do something to see that they're going to be able to survive this kind of a storm and take care of our citizens. Huge problem. We need to do that with all of our infrastructure, and I would have experts in my administration that could deal with that.
Could I ask, is Tampa General in the wrong place?
Well, I suppose if you had to do it over again, you'd have to have a good look at that. It's centrally located, of course, for the west coast of Florida, but it is in a very vulnerable zone. You can see that during the parades that we have here. It can be difficult to get to.
All right. Well, this next question is from a viewer who sent this in on social media. Marla Roberts of Tampa asks, there are many potholes on many city streets in Tampa. Why is that happening? Mr. Straz, let's start with you. Why do the city streets seem to be in such poor condition these days?
Because the current administration hadn't done anything. They let all this happen over the last 8 years. And they'll say, well, we don't have the money for it. Well, they should plan for it. It hasn't been planned for. Streets in Tampa are bad all over. I'm not just talking about East and West Tampa, where they're horrible. South Tampa, too, North Tampa, even downtown. They're bad, and it's been let go.
All
no
right.
plan.
Ms. Gaster?
It's not that the administration hasn't done anything for that. We've been through 8 years of dramatic budget cuts. And so I think that the city workers do an outstanding job of providing stellar services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we have a number of roadways. Our budget, our repaving, all of our streets are on a 75-year repaving schedule. And we have, I believe, close to $6 million for close to $50 million worth of need. And a lot of the roads in the city are county roads that, you know, traverse through city property. So I would I would definitely, with the All for Transportation, use that money to pave some roadways. The roadways are in bad condition. There's no doubt about that. I mean, a lot of them are connected by potholes, frankly. But you make decisions as a leader when you have budget, serious budget constraints on what services you're going to provide.
All right. Well, now we're going to give each candidate the chance to ask the other a question. Each will have a minute to respond. Jane Castor, what would you like to ask David Straz?
I would ask David Straz, you know, since the primary, all you have focused on is negative campaigning. I would ask you, what are your plans and your ideas for the issues that are facing our community today?
Well, I'd like to respond to that. I don't agree at all that it's negative campaigning. What I'm doing is bringing out the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, as I have done all my life in my business career. And I want the truth to be known by the citizens of Tampa. The win, lose, or draw, this needs to be out on the table. The people need to know the problems and the deficiencies that exist.
All right, Mr. Straz, you can ask Ms. Castor a question.
All right, I have a question. Jane, I noticed from your campaigns that you talk about creating jobs. Mm-hmm. How many non-governmental jobs have you created?
How many non-governmental jobs have I created?
Yes.
None.
Thank you.
All right. Well, it's now time for our one-minute closing statements. I want to thank Jane Castor and David Straz for their participation. Thank you very much. And thanks to the Hillsborough League of Women Voters for their time in for their help in timing this debate. Thank you very much. And our first statement comes from Jane Castor. Ms. Castor, you have a minute to sum up your closing statement.
All right, thank you. I have spent 31 years serving this community as a police officer, patrolling every inch of our city. And it was an honor for me to serve our community, and it would be an honor to come back as the mayor. I am the candidate that has the skill, knowledge, and experience to successfully lead Tampa into the future. And this city is going to change more in the next 10 years than it has in my entire lifetime. And we have one opportunity to create that city that we all want to live and work in, that city that we'll be proud to pass off to the next generation. And I want to be a part of that. So I would appreciate your vote on April 23rd to be the next mayor of the city of Tampa.
All right, Ms. Castor, thank you very much. Mr. Straz, your closing statement.
Yes, I have run big organizations, big profitable organizations, big nonprofit organizations. With that kind of experience, there is no one better qualified than I to run a billion-dollar budget like we have in the city. When I am your mayor, I will run your city and your money like I run my own. With integrity, honesty, transparency, and imagination. I'm running to be your mayor. Please vote for David Straz on April 23rd. Thank you.
Well, thank you both for a great debate. That concludes our debate between the candidates of the upcoming runoff election for Tampa's next mayor. Thank you again to the candidates for helping the voters of Tampa make their choice. And remember to vote in the runoff election on Tuesday, April 23rd. Thanks for watching this special edition of Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org. Well, that was the debate Friday night at WEDU-TV's studios with the two candidates for mayor of Tampa. The election, the final choice is going to be made on April 23rd. And David Straz is a businessman. He's one of the candidates for mayor. And Jane Castor is the former police chief of the city of Tampa. She is also running for mayor. So those are the two candidates. So what did you think? You can email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. And we got one email while it was on from Imad. Imad writes, it's all too familiar, the best female candidate opposing the richest white male candidate while the best qualified candidate sits down. Tough choice, writes Imad. And
Imad goes on to say, racially insensitive cop, that's his words, or an old guy who likes running red lights. So that is the view of one person who's been listening for the last 20 minutes. I should say that during that debate, I had unfortunately prepared about 24 questions, and we got to maybe 9 of the questions that I wanted to ask. We had a little bit of extra time at the end, but we weren't able to squeeze in some more questions. So there were certainly a lot more issues that we could have talked about, including the affordable housing issue. Did not come up in the main part of that, or did not come up during that debate. So I apologize for that. Apologize for not having more time. We only had a total of about 26 minutes to record that debate. Well, this is 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. And if you want to comment about what you've heard, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. In the next hour, it should be an interesting show because Phoenix, Arizona is considered to be a suburban area. And a few years ago, they put in a train system. And that came up during our mayoral debate just now. Well, a few years ago, Phoenix put in a train system. And by all accounts, it's a pretty popular commuter system that people are using in Phoenix, Arizona. The head of the Phoenix Public Transportation Department is now the head of HART here in Hillsborough County, the public transportation agency in Hillsborough County. So we're going to hear from the new director of HART here in the next hour, and I'll be very interested to hear what he has to say about mass transit and what he has to say about trains and the viability of trains and his experience. So that's coming up with Sean Canaan in the next hour, so stay tuned. This is 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. And let's go to Terry in Tampa. Terry, thanks a lot for calling. What would you like to say?
Good morning, Rob. Great program, as usual. I'm glad to be able to, be part of that there. Hey, I just had a quick comment concerning, the mayoral debate that you had. It was very well presented. And the thing that stuck out in my mind was that, Ms. Spencer wasn't answering for a lot of the disparities that have been happening in the community. That she's been entrenched in, for the last 30 years, it hasn't been good for a lot of communities. And I think that hasn't been dealt about, concerning her position on, the bicycles, for instance, of people being stopped and ticketed specifically because, they were in certain areas and on a certain complexion. And, there's a lot of violence that has been in the communities, outside of the welfare community, and I don't think that has been addressed, and I think that Mr. Strash probably would be a better alternative, seeing that he's been, more sympathetic, not only with his ideas, but with his finances as well. So let's be forward-thinking and try to get somebody in there that's going to help and, and not put us in more of a police state.
All right, Terry, thanks a lot. And Terry, so you read that series in the Tampa Bay Times about biking while black and young African-Americans, especially males, getting higher rates of tickets than in black communities here in Tampa than in any other communities.
30 years of the same thing, Rob. That's what I'm saying.
Man, so
why would we choose 30 years of the same thing?
Yeah,
like, he's not even defending that or saying that it was anything other than somebody's job, just like where were they at? They said it's just my job, and it was found to be, what was that called? Nuremberg trial? It's just my job. That don't work.
Yeah, now she's apologized since then. In the last few months, she's apologized several times for the high number of tickets. But what do you think it would take for the former chief to rebuild that relationship with the black community?
Well, first of all, for them to stop killing the community leaders that really represent the truest form of community thought, and to stop ostracizing them and pushing them to the perimeters and making us distant and bring us into the fold, just like any, liberated society and understanding people do, and have us part of the conversation instead of saying, we have no valid point of view. If we're being dismissed and marginalized, it's like with the president when he calls, makes those others makes derogatory remarks and concerning those that are not like him, it's easy to be dismissive of our wants and our needs. You know, we have like the transportation needs, we have financial needs, we have food deserts in our communities. There's a lot of things that if you're not people oriented, you're not going to be able to see, because if you're just entrenched into what do you call it, a control system, then the point is to maintain control. Everything else is not expedient unless it's a part of the control system. And so we're going to ask for more control. We're supposed to be free in America, not, you know, under more and more greater control as to how to be an American.
All right. Well, Terry, thanks a lot. Thanks for giving us your thoughts.
Thank you, Robert. I'm glad you're back.
All right. Thanks for saying that. All right. There's Terry in Tampa. Thank you very much. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And we're going to switch gears a little bit here and listen to something that happened over the weekend. This is from one, and we've done this in past campaigns too, playing Donald Trump speeches and Bernie Sanders speeches and Hillary Clinton speeches and speeches by other Republicans, too, in 2016. We're going to hear some speeches as we get closer to the presidential election from people that are out there running for office. Right now, we're going to hear a talk that was given yesterday, at least part of a talk that was given yesterday, by the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who was talking yesterday a little bit about morality and about coming out. And we're going to listen to Pete Buttigieg right now here on 88.5 FM. This is what he said, the only gay Democrat in the presidential race. We're going to hear Pete Buttigieg right now.
To see an out bisexual legislator on stage here with Katie Hill and so many others that it is literally impossible to name, and that's a very good thing, because that means we're getting somewhere, but we're not there yet. My name is Pete Buttigieg, for understandable reasons, better known as Mayor Pete, and lately, I think still better known as the husband of Chasten Buttigieg. Chasten and I have been having a pretty good year so far. I'm not surprised that our message is resonating. I've always believed in our message, but I'd be lying if I didn't admit to you that I'm a little surprised by the trajectory that we're on, by the speed of it. But then again, nothing is more common to the American political experience than watching things change quick, for better and for worse, and very often for better. Just look at some of the things that have changed since the beginning of this decade, when I was first running for mayor of my hometown, or since the beginning of my adult life as an awkward 18-year-old walking the halls of St. Joseph High School. Because back then, I would have believed that you could either be gay or you could be married, but not both, not where I live. That if you were gay, you could either be out or you could run for office, but not both. That in our country, you could live with a same-sex spouse or you could serve in the military, but not both. As a kid, I was hoping one day I'd be an astronaut and travel to outer space. But no way would I have believed that one fine day in the spring of 2019, I would be standing in a ballroom in Washington, 37 years old, a veteran of the war in Afghanistan, in my eighth year as mayor of my hometown, a couple hours after going on Meet the Press as a credible contender for the American presidency, with my husband looking on from his table. It's amazing what's changed just in my young lifetime. Since announcing my exploratory committee in January, I've done countless interviews on the historic implications of a potential out candidate, on what it could mean to have a same-sex first family, on whether America is ready for a gay president. And I've given just as many interviews where it didn't even come up, because sexual orientation was not considered one of the most unusual or important things to discuss with me in the context of the 2020 race. And that in itself is historic in a way. When I came out in 2015, it was for the simple reason that I was finally ready. I had been wrestling with my sexuality for years. And if I had not deployed to Afghanistan, I might never have found the courage to come out. But there's something that happens to you when you write a letter and put it in an envelope and write just in case on the outside, leave it where your family can find it if they have to. It forces you to realize that you only get one life. You only get to be one person. And so I knew when I did come home safely in 2014 that it was just going to be a matter of time. Inconveniently, that time came in the middle of my reelection campaign. It came while Mike Pence was governor of Indiana. And since there had never been an out-elected executive in our state, no one was sure what the effect would be on my future. Would people in our socially conservative community embrace me and continue to judge me based on the job that I did for them? Or would they turn on me, unable to look past the fact that who I was something they had been brought up to reject? There was only one way to find out for sure. So I wrote an op-ed for the newspaper, waited to see what would happen. And to make a very long story short, what happened was that re-election night where we got 80% of the vote. I got a lot of questions about why I came out when I did, whether it was designed to serve some purpose. In fact, it was designed to serve a very simple and private purpose, which was I wanted to start dating. I turned 33. I was a grown man, well-traveled, well-educated, sitting mayor, and a war veteran, with absolutely no idea what it was like to be in love. And I wasn't sure how to get started either. So I did what people my age do, use the internet. I got friends to help me pick out the right photos, set up online profiles, started lining up dates. One day, I was skimming through profiles on an app. Possibly not the app you're thinking of. It's not important which app. Well, I looked at that little screen on my phone and I saw this smile, this guy. And I clicked the button on the right because I had to meet him. And one of the best things about these last couple months has been watching America beat him too and start to fall for Chasten just like I did. And I think you ought to stand up for a minute because he's right there. Now, I've told that story in a lot more detail in my book, which I'm hoping you'll pick up because it's kind of how we're paying off the wedding bills. It's a really happy story in the end for all its ups and downs. But there's another part of the story that, frankly, even now I have a harder time talking about. I think because it's hard to admit. I'm uncomfortable admitting it even now, even though it's something that maybe won't be so surprising. And it's the fact that when I was younger, I would have done anything to not be gay. When I began to halfway realize what it meant that I felt the way I did about people I saw in the hallway at school or the dining hall in college, it launched in me something I can only describe as a kind of war. And if that war had been settled on the terms that I would have wished for when I was 15 or 20 or frankly even 25, I would not be standing here. If you had offered me a pill to make me straight, I would have swallowed it before you had time to give me a sip of water. It is a hard thing to think about now. It's hard to face the truth that there were times in my life when if you had shown me exactly what it was inside me that made me gay, I would have cut it out with a knife. And the reason it's so awful to think about isn't just the knowledge that so many young people struggling to come to terms with their sexuality or their gender identity do just that. They harm themselves, figuratively or literally. But the real reason that it's so hard to think about is if I had the chance to do that, I would never have found my way to Chasten. But the best thing in my life, my marriage, might not have happened at all. My marriage. This thing I can't even describe without going into cliches. Like talking about how my world went from black and white to color the moment we held hands toward the end of our first date. The thing that made it possible for me to get through the loss of my father this year, this man who lifted up not just me, but Dad and Mom through those last awful days. How dark the thought that the man that I admire and care about and love sharing with the rest of the country, and even more importantly, can't wait to share one day with raising children, might not have been part of my life at all. Thank God there was no pill. Thank God there was no knife. People talk about things like marriage equality as a moral issue. And it is certainly a moral issue as far as I'm concerned. It's a moral issue because being married to Chasten has made me a better human being. Because it has made me more compassionate, more understanding, more self-aware, and more decent. My marriage to Chasten has made me a better man. And yes, Mr. Vice President, it has moved me closer to God. You may be religious and you may not, but if you are, and you are also queer, and you have come through the other side of a period of wishing that you weren't, then you know that that message, that this idea that there is something wrong with you, is a message that puts you at war, not only with yourself, but with your maker. And speaking only for myself, I can tell you that if me being gay was a choice, it was a choice that was made far, far above my pay grade. And that's the thing I wish the Mike Pences of the world would understand. That if you got a problem with who I am, your problem is not with me. Your quarrel, sir, is with my creator. So back to the happy part. Like I said, we got married. In June, at our church, it was a beautiful ceremony, full of family and friends, people Chasten grew up with, people I served with in the military, and I'm so mindful and so thankful that every minute of that marriage, we're enjoying a freedom that came to us because of the work of people like the people in this room. People who saw to it that the cause of LGBTQ equality, that LGBTQ representation was advanced year by year by year. And that's why I stand here not just as a politician who has benefited from the support of the Victory Fund, but as a loving husband saying thank you, thank you, thank you for what you do in this struggle to bring us all that freedom. And we know that struggle's not over just because marriage equality has come to the land. The struggle is not over when several states in this country, including my own home state of Indiana, don't even have hate crimes legislation. The struggle is not over when in so many parts of our country it's perfectly legal to fire somebody because of who they are or who they love. It must change, and that's why we need a president prepared to sign a federal equality act right away. The struggle is not over when transgender troops, ready to put their lives on the line for this country, have their careers threatened with ruin one tweet at a time by a commander-in-chief who himself pretended to be disabled in order to get out of serving when it was his turn. The struggle is not over for our community by a long shot. And it is part of a struggle for freedom and fairness and a better life that goes far beyond the LGBTQ experience. Every American struggles in some way to experience true freedom. And as I contemplate a presidential campaign and speak out about these issues across the country, the thing I'm most hoping to change is the way that my party talks about our values. Because it's no secret, Democrats are policy people. We are nuanced people. We're quick with the 14-point plan and the PowerPoint deck. Sometimes a bit slower to explain the values that motivate our policies. So it's time for us to get back into the business of talking about values, especially freedom. My party has allowed conservatives to monopolize the language of freedom because they're so interested in freedom from government, freedom from regulation, freedom from taxes. They can forget about the other things besides government that can make you unfree. Freedom isn't just about freedom from. It's about freedom to. Not just freedom from regulation, but freedom to live a life of your choosing. And the LGBTQ experience is a prime example of why that matters. Because you're just not free if a county clerk gets to tell you who you ought to marry because of their interpretation of their religion. Just like you're not free if you're unable to start a new business because leaving your old job means losing your health care. Or if your reproductive health choices are being dictated by a male boss or a politician. So I want to see our country talking, our party talking a lot more about freedom and democracy and security, which, by the way, in the 21st century is an awful lot more complex than putting up a wall from sea to shining sea. We need a new vocabulary and a new bold vision, and the big idea of my entering the 2020 conversation is that the best way to get a new vocabulary for our values is to elevate a new generation of leaders. I was in high school when Columbine happened. I belonged to the school shooting generation, the generation that provided most of the troops for the conflicts after 9/11. The one that's going to be on the business end of climate change for the rest of our lives and could be the worst, the first in American history to be worse off than our parents economically by the time I reach the current age of the current president in 2054. I always love letting that sink in for a second. Everyone in our generation, just like anyone who's ever packed their bags on the order of a president and gone overseas, anybody whose marriage has depended on a single vote in the U.S. Supreme Court, everybody in our generation knows that politics isn't theoretical, it is personal. And it's at that personal level that politics can make such a big difference in our lives. A bad one or a very good one? Because my generation is also the first to know marriage equality as the law of the land for the majority of our adult lives. That didn't just happen. That was the result of political struggle, moral struggle, struggle by people with the courage to make change and bend the arc of history in the direction of justice. And that personal struggle for millions of Americans will be just a little easier when they see themselves represented at every level of political leadership, and I mean every level, thanks to support from people like you. So here we are. It's 2019. America's in big trouble, and we need a fresh start. And yet I am as optimistic as ever, because as every candidate who's been supported by this effort knows, candidates who often made a difference, whether they won or not, just by being on that ballot, made a difference before the first vote was cast. Running for office, at the end of the day, is an act of hope. So, next time a reporter asks me if America is ready for a gay president, I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to give them the only answer that I can think of that's honest, and it's this. I trust my fellow Americans, but at the end of the day, there's exactly one way to find out for sure. Thank you. Thank you, and I'll see you on the trail.
Well, it's South Bend, Indiana Mayor Democrat Peter Buttigieg, who has not yet announced that he's running for mayor, but he is widely believed to be making that announcement this coming Sunday. So what do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Lots of people are making donations today online, and we want to thank some of them. Thanks to Kelly, who likes the bumpy ride. She made a $100 donation. Kelly's in St. Petersburg. Thank you very much for that. And got some other donations, too. We've got a $1,000 donation from Cecilia in Lake Alfred. Thank you for that nice contribution. She loves all of WMNF. I'm going to read some of the emails that have come in regarding what we've heard here for the last hour. Jeff in Newport Richey writes regarding Mayor Pete Buttigieg. He says, why does he think he's a credible contender? If he even does win the nomination, he'll have to run against President Trump, writes Jeff in Port Richey. That's Jeff's email. And then Chip writes this. He said, I don't get it. Tampa's supposed to be very blue and fairly progressive, yet chose the two most Republican candidates for the runoff for mayor, passing over the three most progressive options. While Jane Castor has had good answers during the campaign, I'm leery of a former cop being mayor of a city that has a history of an abusive, unfriendly police force. That's a Chip in Tampa. Thanks to a Catherine in Safety Harbor, she made two donations, and she likes Radioactivity and the Sustainable Living Program. Diallo wrote this about the Peter Buttigieg potential candidacy. He says, I have nothing against LGBT community. It's great that they can come out and live in peace. I just wish that civil rights justice moved as fast, writes Diallo. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, if you want to comment. And then here's Lou in Tampa. He says, thanks for playing Mayor Pete. If I haven't said it before, I'm very glad you're back. So that's Lou in Tampa. And then Anonymous writes this regarding the Tampa mayoral race. Anonymous says, when we have candidates with money and no knowledge and say they will hire experts, we have to be careful. Usually it is monetary gain and is bias, writes Anonymous. So Anonymous, thank you for that. And here's somebody complaining that I played the Mayor Pete speech. He said, what's wrong with you today, Rob? So thank you for that. Thank you, Anonymous, for writing that. I thought it was an interesting speech. And I think that, you know, when it comes to somebody that has really thought out their answers and thought out their positions, and this is certainly not an endorsement, but I think it's kind of refreshing to have somebody who has thought two or three or four steps down the road and isn't pulling just stuff out of their pocket. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play your comments back tomorrow. I think some of our comments have been a little bit lost. We've had a transition in our engineering department here at WMNF, and so our phone system wasn't working from Friday, but I think we'll be able to get it working in time for the comments for tomorrow. And again, if you want to call us up, you can make your comment about today's show by calling 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play your comments back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Coming up in the next hour, the new head of HART, the transportation agency in Hillsborough County, he'll be Sean's guest on the Midpoint program, and I'll be very interested to hear what he said about his experience in Phoenix, where Phoenix, a largely suburban community, was able to put in a successful commuter rail system. Well, how the heck did they do it? I want to hear that story. And Sean is going to be asking the questions for the next hour right here on 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. Frank Knox has been our phone producer today. Stay tuned for the news.